Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome in. The Lions 24/7 podcast is back. Signing day has come and gone. We'll have a lot to talk about there. In our last episode, we did a position by position breakdown. Mentioned all 27 players who ultimately signed with Penn State on Wednesday. Would encourage you for a detailed look at each of those guys to check out our episode earlier this week. We have Barton Simmons, the National Director of Scouting for 24/7 Sports, on for a really solid 25-minute segment. Later here on the podcast, he goes over some of his favorite players in the Penn State class. And some of those who maybe he thinks are going to exceed expectations, exceed their rankings, even the rankings that he helped apply to those players. So look forward to that conversation. But here for the moment on a Friday afternoon, we are fresh out of Penn State's Bowl Media Day. We'll get a chance to do another Bowl Media Day down in Dallas the day after Christmas. But a lot to take away from this one. And Tyler Donahue, Sean Fitz with you. And Sean, we'll start off. We now know who's going to be calling plays in this game against Memphis.
We do know. And it's Tyler Bowen, former tight ends coach, but tight ends coach is the interim OC. Not a big surprise. I think that was the first guy that we pointed to coming off of Ricky Ronnie going to Old Dominion. But he's got play calling experience. He was the offensive coordinator at Fordham after Joe Moorhead left. So he's got an opportunity to, I guess, sort of audition for James Franklin. And that's the way that I kind of look at it right now. You saw in the Tax Slayer Bowl against Georgia, Ricky Ronnie was sort of up for an audition. Of course, he wasn't up for the job. I do think Bowen's going to get the opportunity to interview for this job, but I think that this is something that James Franklin could put into his memory bank. He's often said that he's always interviewing, he's always observing, and this is Tyler Bowen's shot, so it's a great one. I mean, Tyler's, what, 31 years old? He's going to have an opportunity to call a New Year's Six bowl game and really just kind of get on the radar for himself, and I think that's a big thing. You got some continuity with the same offense going through, which is, you know, it's what happens in every bowl game, but still, different tendencies, different timing, different things like that. Be interested to see how Bowen gets it done.
And I know many of our listeners know this already, but Tyler Bowen serves as Penn State's offensive recruiting coordinator. We had a chance to speak with him on signing day. So he does a lot for this program, and it's hard to forget. What is he, 31 years old, Sean? You know, this is a great opportunity for him in his career. And as you said, Ricky Ronnie had the opportunity to do this back in 2015. Then he resumed an assistant role in the offensive staff with Moorhead. Now Franklin definitely was pretty forthright, indicating that while there are members of this staff and certainly Tyler Bowen under consideration for the job and in those conversations, he did say it was more of a equated thing to Ricky Ronnie's experience. And it seems to be that Franklin isn't going to give us much more than that on this conversation, because he was asked, as you'd expect, two or three times over the course of his press conference today about that offensive coordinator search. And he had probably what resulted in some of the most laughs I've heard in this media room covering the team, and when he was saying he wasn't just going to go to Champs and find the guy who has all the answers after every play during the course of the season. And Johnny Hindsight, you know, was a reference he threw out there, and it was a little bit of brevity. He also mentioned, Franklin did, people are tracking his flights. And Sean Fitz, were you aware that people were tracking James Franklin's flights?
Yeah, our flight tracker's on the site. James would like to have a word with you, because I don't think he appreciates it as much as the folks on our board at Lions 24/7 do. So he's trying to keep it, I said it last episode, he's trying to keep that thing as tight as possible. The inner circle is more like a dot when you're talking about the guys that are involved in this coaching search. Franklin says everything that gets out impacts something down the line. We'll see what happens. I mean, he's obviously not ready to name a coach. But to go back to Bowen for a second, it's kind of in that Ronnie situation where if you're doing it right, if you hire a guy that's going to get your offense where you need it to be, I mean, that's a 2-year job. I mean, this isn't something where he's hiring his sidekick for the next 5 to 10 years. This is a 2-year job where that guy can eventually go on and be a head coach somewhere or go to the NFL or do something up the chain. So when that comes back around, I mean, Bowen's going to be up for it in 2 years or whatever if all goes to plan. So I think this is a great opportunity for him. I'm very high on what he's done with the tight ends. As I said, he's got coordinator experience, calling plays for Fordham. Then he went to Maryland, was an offensive line coach. So very diverse on the resume. And for him to get this shot says a lot. James Franklin often says he's a rising star. We're going to get to see what happens when Penn State plays Memphis in I guess, just over a week.
And selfishly, from our perspective, Tyler, very great dealing with the media. It's something that he's gotten better and better with, and he was fantastic to speak with on Wednesday. Now, there was a lot of player news coming out of this one. I know a lot of focus on the coaching staff, what's going to happen with the offensive coordinator. Put that one on the back burner for now. We know what they're going to do for the Cotton Bowl. And there is no timeline, at least publicly, that Franklin was going to share on when he's going to announce any kind of hiring. Injury updates were certainly a factor here because when the season ended, there were some question marks. One of them, obviously, at the starting quarterback spot. Will Levis stepped up to start against Rutgers. Wasn't very pretty as a passer. Got the job done, got a win. But it sounds like they're going to get QB1 back, expecting a, quote, 100% Sean Clifford against Memphis. He's been increasing his reps on the practice field over the course of bowl preparation and certainly every indication is he's going to be back in the saddle when they get into the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah, healthy enough is probably how I would describe it. I mean, I don't know that he's going to get back to 100%. It takes a while. I mean, these guys take a beating, especially the way Penn State runs a quarterback. It takes a while for him to eventually get back to 100%. Sounds like he got taken care of what he needed to get taken care of. The extra time is going to pay off, and he's going to be out there and be starting. I mean, it really, I saw him when he was at Lash the other day. Looked fine, looked ready to go. They're still easing him in there on the practice field, which is really what you want. I mean, you want Will Levis to get reps. You want those freshmen to get some reps in there. So every opportunity that he's going to get are opportunities that he needs because he does need improvement. But at the end of the day, I mean, this bowl practice is not going to make and break you or break you. It's an opportunity for guys like Roberson, like Michael Johnson Jr., because they're getting a chance at this juncture in bowl practice. They're getting a chance to run their own stuff. This is not go out there and run plays off a card for scout team. They're going to go out there, run Penn State's offense, see what they've got. So even at 100%, Sean Clifford wouldn't be getting all the snaps, but it seems like that's been more balanced and they're just going to work their way until they get down to Dallas next week. They're going to work their way up to Clifford being, I guess, the full-time guy.
Clifford will be going up against a Memphis defense that was pretty pedestrian this year. The Memphis offense, top 10 in scoring, defense solid, but certainly not a stout group, and their defensive coordinator departed to join the Florida State staff, so they're dealing with a transition there. Also in the offensive backfield, you talked about healthy enough. That was not the case for Noah Cain over the course of November. We kept waiting week after week. He would travel with the team. They were very conservative with that approach, one, because of the running back depth that they have. We saw what Journey Brown was able to do. They like what they have in Devin Ford. Ricky Slade was still involved there. But Noah Cain, Sean, it's what we got here was good to go, normal. Franklin says, you know, there was times when they thought he was on track to play on a certain week, and then they would see some lingering limping and just not enough to convince them to take a chance and have this kid have a setback. And Franklin, you know, put it this way. They said if they had maybe rolled the dice in one of those games in November, he may not be available in this situation to play in the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah, the setback is not worth the risk. You know, you're just going to, or I guess the reward would not be worth the risk in that point, especially with Journey Brown playing the way that he was. So you get Noah Cain back from the bowl. I think, I mean, it's going to be a situation where you're going to have all four of those guys with an opportunity to get carries. But I think the split just is going to lean heavier to Journey Brown because he was so fantastic at the end of the year. So good news to get Cain back. I mean, it's really... I mean, he provided something for this offense that they really didn't have. Now, Journey Brown started to get around to that and give them the tough yards and do some really good things. So not sure how much that split's going to go, but get that kid healthy, get him to the spring, get him to next season, and then give him a chance to compete. And I think that's certainly the way to go. Defensively, of course, they missed Yetur Gross-Matos. They missed Tariq Castro-Fields for the Rutgers game. Gross-Matos had a brace on his left hand. He plans to play. From what we saw from the depth chart, Tariq Castro-Fields plans to play. You know, Penn State, you don't want to say completely healthy, but fairly healthy across the board.
Yeah, and Gross-Matos had that brace on his left hand again today. Got a chance to speak with him for a bit. And, you know, really diving into the fact that he made note in his draft announcement that he wanted to play in the bowl game. We've seen a lot of guys, unless it's a playoff matchup, they're often going to move forward now. I shouldn't say often, but it's happening with more frequency than ever in college football, where you see players declare for the draft and say, I'm also not playing in the bowl game. Yetur said that was not going to happen. And despite the fact that he is clearly has a limitation or an ailment there with his left hand, suffering that injury against Ohio State, he says he's going to be ready to roll. So his expectation is to play. Obviously, it's a chance for him to go out on top, and he wants to help send the senior class out with a victory and finish off an 11-win season on a big stage. But let's face it, it's also going to be an audition like every game is, but his final audition for NFL draft scouts, you know, until you start factoring in the combine testing and the interviewing and all that different stuff.
And given the numbers that they have at defensive end, I don't think anybody expects him to play a full game like he would have against Ohio State or something like that. On top of that, Memphis starting right tackle for the season is not going to play. He's not even on the roster anymore. So obviously that's something that Penn State defensive ends will like to see in front of them. They're getting a guy that's probably not going to play or hasn't played a lot of football this year. So, I can see this being a productive game for him, but there's no reason to play him, you know, full reps. You've got a chance to get, other guys like Simmons and Joseph and Adisa Isaac and Jason Owe. Get some of those guys some reps because they're going to need it coming out of the season.
Yetur was quick to point out Adisa Isaac and Jason Owe as guys, he says, are on the come up behind him. And when he's off campus, he thinks they're going to do big things. Saw flashes from both of them this year. So Yetur, we know the verdict there. We know that Michael Mennett and Will Fries are coming back. We know Pat Freiermuth is coming back. One guy that we're all waiting for, KJ Hamler, and he was not about to give us any answers at the bowl game regarding his decision. Whether he has made one or not, we do not know. He says that he is still internally debating the two options of either declaring for the draft after his redshirt sophomore season or returning for another year in Happy Valley. But he says we will find out after the bowl game. He's one of a few guys we have talked about who are draft eligible and are starters for this team. But very clearly, the guy who's led this team in receiving back-to-back years, the only receiver each of those 2 years who has exceeded 30 receptions. So important to this offense. He was named team MVP in the banquet. Clearly wasn't really in the mood today to talk too much about the NFL draft. But, whether or not he's got a decision made, I guess we'll find out, I think, really on the 26th. On the 28th, maybe the 29th. And I think Miles Sanders waited a day or two for his announcement. But I have to imagine we're going to find out pretty quickly.
I would think so. I mean, this is something he's been weighing and thinking about for a long time, and I've got to think he's close to a decision. Again, I mean, there's pros and cons for everything. Franklin talked about that in his press conference, not just in respect to KJ, but also guys like Tariq Castro-Fields, Shaka Toney, other guys with some decisions to make. So they'll sit down, they'll talk about it a little bit more. We'll see where he falls on the draft board. You know, Penn State has an opportunity to get feedback on 5 underclassmen per draft, and I'm sure KJ Hamler was one of them. So they'll have an opportunity to take that feedback and take what they will. Really, really good receiver class, but as I said last episode, I'm not really sure how much further he's going to move up. I see him as a late second, early third round pick right now. Speed is so, it's so hard to find, and really these teams maybe overvalue it at times. So KJ goes out there and busts a 4.3. All of a sudden he moves up a couple of spots, and that's a pretty good spot to be in.
Franklin seemed to indicate that once you're getting that round 3 or below report back, that maybe it's a better idea to come back. And so the discussions what will happen, and what we've said, KJ Hamler has the speed, and that's what people covet. Doesn't have the size right now, and I don't think that's going to come between now and when he gets on an NFL football field. Other roster stuff here, Pat Freiermuth, got a chance to speak with him today, went into his decision. He made that decision, he said probably came to terms with it towards the second half of the season that he was going to stay stay on campus, but he said it was he nailed it in with that Ohio State game. He said afterward, and I don't know if you saw this, Sean, after that Ohio State game, he was very visibly emotional about that loss. And he said he told Sean Clifford afterward that he was coming back for 2020. We all found out a week later after the Rutgers game. And then we said, well, what was the decision for you? I've never heard this response. He said he wasn't ready to live on his own, deal with paying bills and doing adult stuff. And I think he knows he makes a lot of money playing football at that level, that it will help with the bills, but it was a funny response. And, you know, Pat, again, we heard it from Franklin. We heard it from Freiermuth. I think it's going to be a mantra we hear into the spring, unfinished business. And it's something that he mentioned a couple times.
Well, and that's the reason that these rules are in place. I mean, he's just been in college for 2 years. I know he's got the loophole and he could have done it, but still, I mean, getting a chance to go on your own at that age is tough for anybody. Let alone with the pressure of being on an NFL franchise. So I just think it's one of those things. And we heard about this during the summer that he could possibly do this. And everybody around the program and everybody that we talked to said, yeah, he's really not considering it because I don't think he's been here long enough. Well, then all of a sudden the touchdowns pile up, the catches and the accolades start to pile up, the snubs start to pile up, of course. But it's just one of those things where he wasn't done being a college kid. And, you know, college football isn't for everybody. So I could see people in this situation taking advantage of that and going and starting to get paid for what they're going through. Pat didn't really seem like he was, you know, leaning that way in any sort of manner. So him coming back is not a shot. It's good to hear that he likes having fun. He likes Penn State and he likes playing football for them.
And he, by the way, I was going to mention this on the other side when we get into some signing day stuff, but Freiermuth said he was on the phone the weekend before Theo Johnson's announcement, the second announcement after he'd already postponed. And Freiermuth, he took a lot of credit. I'm not going to lie. He said he played a big role in recruiting Theo Johnson, and really he promised him. He said, you get to campus, I'll take you under my wing. I'll show you my entire process. You stick to it, you're going to be a star at Penn State. And Theo Johnson will be here in a few weeks, Sean. So I know that's something Penn State fans are really happy to hear. And it doesn't seem like this is a program that's going to have to potentially deal with much of a drop-off at the position. We'll find out when Pat actually does depart campus. But really a solid peer recruiting job, not a peer recruiting job, from the internal Penn State program with Freiermuth reaching out, taking it upon himself to do his best with Theo Johnson. So he's a guy who wants everyone all in next year. He wants to go chase a championship. He said that's the expectation for 2020, win a national championship at Penn State. So he's doing his part there. In terms of reaction to Justin Shorter hitting the transfer portal, it's a touchy subject, obviously, but players were pretty open about it when I asked the question. Wasn't sure what kind of reaction I was going to get, and I specifically talked to two of his classmates from that 2018 recruiting class, Sean, PJ Mustipher, Jahan Dotson. Dotson and him go pretty far back, both at the same position as well. They said they've been in communication with him since then. They understand that he needs to do what's right for him. But I will say, without getting anything too definitive, wasn't getting any kind of vibes really that Justin Shorter is about to swing on back here and rejoin the roster. Who knows with that? But I will say, other thing that kind of stood out, KJ Hamler was asked about it, and it sounded like he was very surprised that Justin Shorter made this decision. It sounded like he wasn't really expecting it or in the loop on it. And for someone who prides himself as kind of the flag bearer, the leader of that receiver room, I'm not going to say that he sounded hurt, but he certainly sounded a bit stunned here a few weeks removed from Justin Shorter actually making this decision.
That's certainly an eye-opener. I mean, for somebody like KJ, who has his hand in so many, you know, cookie jars, for him to be a leader of that wide receiver room, for somebody to turn around and say, okay, I'm done, maybe I'm not getting the ball enough, maybe something else is here at play. I mean, you'd like to think that you would see the warning signs coming, but they haven't. In terms of his transfer, it doesn't seem like it was something that was completely thought out. The process after transferring was completely thought out. We haven't seen him pop up on any visits. A few schools have popped up, Florida being one of them, but really no real action on that so far. So we'll see what happens with Shorter. But yeah, I think them being surprised and caught off guard, you can usually see it coming. I mean, you can see people that are disgruntled or are not happy with their role and all that kind of stuff. You can see that coming. Shorter, I think it's just his personality to be quieter, to sort of be reserved in that aspect. And that's why some of them didn't see it coming.
And Jahan Dotson, you know, didn't hold back. He said it was, you know, pretty devastating, pretty difficult to deal with. And as I said, I remember those two on the camp circuit together, and you know, they were talking about, you know, each other very highly, and ultimately maybe playing together. And you know, it's tough to, you know, to lose someone like that. And you know, we don't know if Shorter will be back, but again, not the vibes I was picking up there. Last year at this time, Justin Shorter was viewed as an ascending player coming off of a redshirt season during bowl preparation, very important. In fact, Trace McSorley pointed to him as the top, you know, one of the top performers among that freshman class. I asked the question today to James Franklin, who is showing they've pushed past that freshman wall. He calls it the freshman funk, and is finishing things off strong and giving you a good indication that it's going to be maybe a springboard towards spring practice. I know he hates these questions because he always feels like he's going to leave out a name or two, but he gave five names here, and I'll give them to our listeners. Caden Wallace at offensive tackle, Brenton Strange at tight end, Lance Dixon at linebacker, Tyler Rudolph at safety, and Daquan Hardy at cornerback. To me, a couple names that jump off there for obvious reasons: Caden Wallace, Lance Dixon were both on track to be guys who burned their red shirt. That changed midseason. They scaled back and they were kept within that four-game threshold. And then Tyler Rudolph. We've talked about this before. Safety's a spot where you view, you know, you don't see the kind of depth and the incoming talent necessarily that you do at cornerback over the last couple of cycles. You've had some departures there at safety. You're going to lose a senior, but I think it's big to hear that Tyler Rudolph is finishing off his freshman year in a good spot.
They seemed happy with him later in the season. He got to play on some special teams, cover some kicks, and he's going to have an opportunity with Garrett Taylor out of there. He's going to have an opportunity to compete and just slide into that two deep, and we'll see what happens with that. The one guy that he mentioned that I thought was really interesting, Caden Wallace. Of course, he's playing tackle right now, but I think it's one of the more intriguing storylines of the offseason, because you've got a left guard spot open. Caden, as we have forecasted for years, is more of a natural interior guy. So do you slide him over to left guard to compete with Mike Miranda? Do you leave him out at tackle and move Anthony Wigan over there? So I think that when you're establishing a two deep and you're trying to get those 10 guys, you know, you're kind of playing around. So I can see Wigan and Wallace, where they end up in spring could be, you know, completely different than where they're at right now. So interested to see where Wallace, you know, continues to grow. This is a guy they were very high on coming into the season. They thought he would compete and be that fourth tackle, maybe play as much as Dez Holmes did this year, which is kind of getting into every game and being a factor for a series or two or something like that, but not being a full-time guy, but a guy that they could see enough from. They ended up just playing him on field goal team, extra point, realized that wasn't worth losing the year, so they pulled that red shirt back on him. So really interested to see where Caden Wallace goes from there. Lance Dixon's a guy that's got an opportunity. Of course, Cam Brown's out with the Sam. Jan Johnson's out with the Mike. So you've got some shuffling in there. There's some open spots in the two deep where he can go in. And of course, we talked about it. Curtis Jacobs signed this week. Zariah Fisher and Tyler Elsden signed this week as well. You've got Brandon Smith that redshirted. So a lot of talented linebackers in there. So you don't want to miss a step in that linebacker room. So be interesting to see how these guys are tracking through bowl practice. They're going to get an opportunity. You know, it's one of those things where you really don't know what level these guys are on. I mean, you play them on scout team all year. You hear some good things. We heard great things about the defensive line all year. Smith Vilbert's a guy that's been pointed out as having a good bowl practice so far. But you don't really know what level these guys are until they're playing full speed against those with and against those other varsity guys.
And by the way, Daquan Hardy, who was, you know, almost an afterthought last year because he got that offer within 24 hours of the signing period. He was a very late addition to the class. To hear him mention it, and by the way, I forgot one here, Joey Porter Jr., also mentioned by James Franklin. So this cornerback group with Hardy and Porter finishing up strong. Obviously, we've seen a lot more of Porter than we have of Hardy, but then along with Marquise Wilson and Keaton Ellis, and you really like what they got going on in that room underneath Terry Smith's direction. We're going to talk a little bit more about signing day. You'll hear from Barton Simmons, who is the director of scouting at 24/7 Sports, breaking down this Penn State class. But for the moment, a quick word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Penn State, by lunchtime on Wednesday, signed all 27 players. Well, they had signed them earlier than that, but they were announced all by lunchtime. And neat and tidy signing day that rarely has been seen, not just in Happy Valley, but, you know, this is something that we're just not used to seeing a couple months before February, and a team may be all the way done. We'll talk about if they're complete or not. Again, we went position by position with this class on our last episode. We're not going to rehash that all over again, but if you missed it, go check that out. Get a better understanding of some of these guys. But Sean, I thought there were several storylines worth focusing on coming out of this. We had a chance to speak not only with James Franklin, but also with the recruiting coordinators. It's Terry Smith on the defensive side of the football. As I said earlier here, it's Tyler Bowen on offense. And to me, one kind of question mark we had was, where was Zariah Fisher going to fit in this defense in 2020? We now have an answer. They plan on playing him at linebacker. Franklin said, even though he's been at 260 pounds, right now he's about 6'3", 255. And Franklin says, you know, you look at that size and you may see a guy who needs to transition to defensive end, or maybe just the guy who's really relegated to being a two-down middle linebacker. But he says, then you watch the film, and you'll hear Barton Simmons echo this later in the conversation with him, and his lateral abilities and his downfield pass coverage for a player that size is phenomenal. They think they got a big-time player here. They felt like that before he made a big jump, and Terry Smith actually mentioned, you know, going up 600 spots or whatever it was in the 24/7 sports rankings. You know, they were high on this guy from the get, and Terry Smith also said something that I've heard on this podcast before. Back in August, leading up to his decision, before he postponed it to September, he was going to Michigan State, and that is from Terry Smith.
That was pretty clear when it happened, too. And yeah, that's a good delay for Penn State to get Zariah Fisher back into the class. You're right. He's slated to start his career at linebacker. Put me in the crowd that, you know, doesn't think he ends up there, but still, he's athletic enough to do so. He's got some ball skills. He can play a little bit. I mean, he's a big kid. I mean, he's like one of those Bama linebackers. It's about 6'3", 260. You stuff him in the middle there and see what he can do. So excited to see how Zariah Fisher progresses. And you're right. This is one that Penn State really, at the time, you know, was struggling to gather momentum and get some things done and finish. And you don't want to lose an in-state kid, especially to a Big Ten East rival that isn't Michigan or Ohio State. So Fisher is one of those guys who goes to Michigan State, and he's 6'3", 260, and all of a sudden they put him at defensive end and he gets 12 sacks in a year. You know, he's one of those guys that you could see as a multi-year starter in the Big Ten, and you don't want those guys to get away. So securing Zariah Fisher is big. I asked James Franklin about Curtis Jacobs and Tyler Elston as linebackers. He quickly corrected me to let me know that Zariah Fisher was a linebacker, even though, you know, some would say that they expect him to be a defensive end eventually. But it's a versatile guy that you can plug into your class. Anytime you get a great football player, you got an opportunity to improve your roster from 1 to 85. I mean, it's a good pickup for Penn State, and he's certainly on the rise right now.
And going by the 24/7 sports rankings, Penn State signed 3 4-star linebackers. Still think there's a chance, and Barton will tell you this again later on, that Curtis Jacobs does earn his way in a 5-star status. He's got a big All-American game coming up next month where he'll have a chance to be with the best of his peers and maybe separate himself a little bit. But Terry Smith did compare Curtis Jacobs to a Micah Parsons presence, not just because of his defensive versatility. He says because of his mindset, and he went into kind of a greater detail on this, and it's a conversation that you and I have had on the show about guys when they get to campus, who they become, and Terry Smith says there's a lot of good players they've signed over the years, but there is an elite mentality that some come equipped with, like a Micah Parsons, he said, like a Saquon Barkley, like an Etor Gross-Matos, and he thinks Curtis Jacobs has that, where that really solves a lot of problems that maybe a normal freshman will run into on that transition from high school, where they just are equipped with that elite mindset where they think, I don't care what level of football I'm playing, I'm going to get on the football field and I'm going to be the one of the best out there. Even if they're not necessarily there yet in their progression, they believe that. And it certainly seems like they feel like they have another guy who carries that kind of outlook in Curtis Jacobs.
Plus, you have the opportunity for him to answer great to elite questions before he gets to Penn State, so he'll be used to it when he gets there. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to spend too much time on Jacobs. Love him as a prospect. Really interested to see how he does down at Under Armour playing in the system. You know, it's so tough to evaluate linebackers at that point, but still, you got him playing in a linebacker system where right now, you know, he's the best player on the field because you can put him at safety, you can put him at linebacker, you can rush him off the edge, you can do pretty much anything. You know, when you ask him to do one thing, how is he going to come along and progress? So be interesting to see that. And then he's going to join a talented group of linebackers. I mean, he's going to spend 1 year likely with Micah Parsons, but then you've got, you know, Brandon Smith is going through there. Lance Dixon was a five-star by 24/7 last year. So you've got a ton of talent in that room. Just keep adding to it. Tyler Elston can do some things. They're, you know, more excited about his athleticism than I think people will realize. Ran a really good shuttle for them at camp. Moved really well. Did the same thing at WVU. So it's going to be interesting to see how these this linebacker group progresses over the next couple of years, because Penn State, frankly, doesn't play. I mean, this is not a typical 4-3. I mean, there are three linebackers out there a bunch, but you're really only leaning on two for the most part. So be interesting to see how those numbers work out. But they just don't offend. I mean, that's the one spot. I mean, you look back a couple of years ago, and Penn State was killing themselves at linebacker recruiting. I mean, there's nothing going on. I think they signed one linebacker, I think 2 years in a row, something along those lines. They're lucky to get some of the productivity that they did get. I mean, Brandon Bell, I love him as a player. You did not expect him to have as productive his career as he did, and they're lucky that he did. So this is an opportunity. I mean, 5 years ago is night and day compared to where they're at linebacker right now.
A very healthy situation for the linebacker room. You can say the same thing about Jawan Sider's group in the running back room. Ricky Slade, Devin Ford, Noah Kane, Journey Brown. Perhaps you've heard of them in the rotation that took place this year. All of them eligible to come back in 2020. And until we're told otherwise, that's what we are anticipating. But there's going to be more competition. And Keziah Holmes, one thing that stood out to me during Penn State's signing day broadcast that they did streaming on Facebook, I watched the Jawan Sider interview and was kind of taking some notes on what he was saying about Keziah Holmes. He says he thinks Keziah Holmes is going to become a household name in Happy Valley. We've talked about the speed. I think he was at a 4.41 in the 40-yard dash. And the production jumps off the page from his upperclassman career, especially as a senior. Another guy Barton will be gushing about when you hear this interview. But Sean, very clearly, they are. And I asked this question of Franklin. How do you find, you know, how do you convince running back prospects at this point, much less them when they live 1,200 miles away or whatever, come up here? We have four guys. They've all played college football. They had a bunch of recruiting accolades too, but come up here and fight for a job. And I think it takes a certain kind of prospect, a certain kind of staff. But James Franklin brought up something very interesting. He said, that's kind of maybe the approach now. The Miles Sanders models is what he said, what he called it. And he talked about this leading up to the draft for Miles Sanders and saying, you know, he has 1 year of legitimate starting running back wear and tear in his body. Whereas you've got players at some programs, and by the time they get through 3 or 4 years at this level, I mean, they've got, you know, maybe they have 5,000, 4,000 rushing yards, but they have a bunch of hits on their body. And you know, what does that mean for their NFL fortunes at the start and to prolong them? And so, you know, he seems to think this is a model that college football, it works. We've seen it at Alabama. We've seen it at Georgia, where guys come, they push, maybe they play a little bit early, maybe they play a lot early, but they've gotten some players who buy into this one. Kevon Lee is the other we mentioned, but Keziah Holmes is coming in as an early enrollee. We know what that did last year for Noah Kane, and you know, watch out for this kid.
It's really fascinating because you want to find those kids with this mindset, and I think that's what people who follow recruiting from a distance don't realize, is that all these kids think they're going to the NFL. And that's not
3 years.
That's not a hopeful thing. That's like, I'm the best player in this area, usually in this little bubble that I'm in, but I'm going to make it to the NFL. I'm going to be better than this guy. So you have to find that guy that's willing to go in. It's like going to Bama. I mean, it's like all these guys, you're asking why they would sign a three-star running back, you know, maybe like a Josh Jacobs, why he would even try to go to Alabama when he's got all these backs in front of him. Well, he thinks he's better than them, and there's nothing wrong with that. And some of these kids are right. Most of them aren't, but it's fascinating to sit back and we're going to parse through these kids and say, oh, he's an 89 three-star, or he's a 94 star, so we understand there's limitations to his game. You know, this kid is probably the best player in his county, you know, some of these best players in their state. And, you know, it's one of those things with the mindset. They think they can play in the NFL. And frankly, those are the kids that you want. You want those kids that have the goal of being three and out and going to the NFL.
Well, Sean, we got what? Keziah Holmes. How often am I going to say Keziah Holmes over the next 3 or 4 years? Holmes, you got Ford, you got Slade, all those guys, you know, and Lee, 4-star guys, got 5-star guys. top 100 overall prospects. And who do we think is going to enter 2020 as the top of the totem pole guy? The three-star kid, from one of those small bubbles where he dominated Journey Brown. So you never know how it's going to shape out for these players. Moving ahead here a little bit, it's going to be fun to follow Tyler Warren. We've mentioned him as the mystery guy. We've talked about him quite a bit. Barton has a lot to say about him as well. But a lot of people's faces lit up. Pat Freiermuth this afternoon, Tyler Bowen on Wednesday, when we mentioned Tyler Warren, they talk about his abilities on the basketball court, just throwing down these vicious dunks. Bowen says he throws about mid-90s, and he's a lefty. He said, fortunately, he can't control his curveball right now. Otherwise, maybe they wouldn't be getting him on campus, and he'd be going off to play professional baseball. But he's a different body type. He's a bigger kid, but it's giving me some flashbacks back to covering Mike Kosicki coming out of high school, a kid who could just jump out of the building, wasn't an all-state volleyball player, an all-state basketball player, and just a player who was putting it together. He was a wide receiver, hadn't had any experience as a true tight end. In that regard, it kind of takes me back to covering Mike when he was coming out of his high school career.
And the thing about Mike is Mike was 215 pounds at that point, and he looked skinny. I mean, he looked skinny. Tyler Warren's 235, 240 pounds. And that's one thing James Franklin talked about on Wednesday, is you're growing these guys, these tight ends that are 6'5 and a half, 6'6, that have the size to play the Y with your hand in the ground as a traditional tight end. And then all of a sudden you can split them out and they can do some special things. So like I said before, I wouldn't be surprised if Tyler Warren has a very productive career at Penn State. He's going to be, beside Theo Johnson all the way. Two tremendous. I mean, I haven't done a survey of tight end classes in the country, but it's got to be as good as any tight end class in the country.
Well, the wide receiver class is pretty good too. Five wide receivers coming on board. And the two guys that we have, hammered home as me and Sean think, really have the ability to maybe come here and play a lot. I think Norvell Black could do it too at the junior college level because of the experience there, and Barton's high on him. But I think Parker Washington, Keandre Lambert, the excitement we heard from guys about those particular players, kind of lend more credence to the thought that if Keandre Lambert can come in, get his strength going and build up in that regard, he's going to have an opportunity to run a lot of routes in the field. Parker Washington will come in later next offseason. You're going to get Lambert on campus in a few weeks, but Washington is a guy, I think it was Franklin said, he's like a vacuum. Wherever the ball is, seems to make that catch. And Jared Parker breaking this kid down was so psyched. I mean, Parker's always an amped up individual, but when he got into Parker Washington, it was just a different gear, and it was a priority for him. And I think he felt the same way about Lambert, a guy that he had recruited for back at Duke. But again, those two guys, I think that they topped that list of those five wide receivers. And again, someone or some people out of this group are going to need to make an impact. If they don't in 2020, this offense could be in trouble. Probably not going to have Justin Shorter, KJ Hamler. Who knows on that? Who transfer portal, is someone going to maybe take a look there? I don't know what the group's going to look like, and I think, there is a very open door for Lambert, for Washington, maybe Norvell Black to come in and claim a spot. I don't want to discount the other players because Jaden Dotton is going to be on campus in January as well. Malik Mega is just a freak talent, but I think, again, hammering home this point, those two are the two that I'm going to be watching very closely, and we'll get an early look at Lambert.
And I asked some of the recruiting staff, and they made Eric Thatcher and Terrell Smith and Charles Walker available to us for the first time, first opportunity to get to talk to some of these guys. I said, who are we not talking about enough in this class? And I believe it was Terrell Smith. He said, Keandre Lambert. And I'm thinking to myself, this is the number 22 receiver in the country, number 132 overall by 24/7 Sports. Somebody's going to know some, but he's right. I mean, we're probably not talking about Keandre Lambert enough. And now he's going to come in January. He's going to have to get stronger. He's going to have to put on some weight, but physically, I mean, he's right up there with some of the elite talents in this class in terms of testing numbers. He's got the best shuttle in the country. So really interested to see how Keandre Lambert assimilates in his first spring, because I think he can play right away. I think Parker Washington, even coming in the summer, and that's one thing James Franklin's said on Wednesday, is they're stressing for some of these guys to get here for the first summer session, even if they can't get here in January, gives them a little bit more time to get on campus, to get situated, and to start competing. So those two, in my mind, clearly at the top of the ones that can make an early impact. But yeah, you've got an opportunity to replenish those wide receiver ranks, and that's something, just looking at the depth chart today, that's something that they desperately need.
You can hear we like those wide receivers. You can hear we like those tight ends. You can hear we like the running backs. No one should feel sorry for this offensive coordinator, whoever gets this job, because the cupboard is not bare by any means in what they're going to inherit. They're going to also have a new quarterback on campus, Micah Bowens, a guy who Franklin was quick to point out. You know, they understand that the one thing that he certainly does not check the box off is his size. He's not a 6'3" player. Both the quarterbacks they signed last year aren't huge guys, especially Taquan Roberson. But I think Bowens is even a bit smaller than them, than Roberson. But Bowens, what he says, he thinks Bowens sees some of Trace McSorley in himself, a guy who, you know, doesn't fit the mold from a physique standpoint, but a guy who won a lot of games at the high school level. He did it with the program, Bishop Gorman, where, it's not a normal program. They're getting on planes to go to games all season long. He was preceded by two Power 5 quarterbacks in that program. The spotlight is always on. So, you know, we've been pretty candid in not declaring Micah Bowens as, the second coming of Justin Fields at Penn State, and the guy who's going to come in and just overwhelm the room. But I think, James Franklin, brings up some stuff they liked about him. They seem to be wanting to do some work on his throwing motion, a little elongated. Tyler Bowen said the same thing there. But, you want to talk about someone that we're not talking about, a Penn State quarterback signee that, has gotten very little coverage over the course of this recruiting calendar year.
And that's fair. And he's not. I don't believe he's going to have the opportunity to come in. I just had the early enrollees pulled up, and then I just closed it. And he's not going to be a factor in the quarterback job, at least in year one, probably in year two as well. So, we'll see what kind of development he has. You're right. He doesn't have the size. Trace McSorley obviously proved that you can do it at that size. But Trace is a special player. And here's the thing. We talk about Micah Bowens and that rant that I just went on about everybody thinking that they belong here and everybody thinking they can play in the NFL. Micah Bowens thinks so too.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And we do plan to have Micah Bowens on the podcast. I hate making promises ahead of time in case things fall through, but I think we are going to have him on very soon. And it's going to be an interesting conversation. I'm curious to hear a lot about him because it seems like a very mature young kid. And as I said, coming from a program like Bishop Gorman, playing that position, it is not a normal prep football experience. Sean, you mentioned those early enrollees. There's going to be 11 of them. And it looks like you've got them in front of you now. So that matches the number we saw last year for scholarship additions. Very clearly, it helped out a lot of these players, whether it was Keaton Ellis, Brandon Smith, Noah Kane, guys who got on the field and made an impact and burned their red shirts and got to be on the field for spring practice and go through some tough times and come out the other side. You want to reveal the list? Go on ahead.
Yeah, and by the way, check out our commit list on 24/7 Sports. There's a little clock beside these guys' names, which means they're early enrollees. You got both Johnsons, of course, Theo and Joseph at cornerback, Enzo Jennings, Keandre Lambert-Smith, who's going by Keandre Lambert-Smith according to the official releases, Keziah Holmes, Cole Brevard, Tyler Elsden, Bryce Mostella, Fatorma Mulba, Nick Dawkins, and Jaden Dotton. So we'll see how many early impact guys they have from that class. A couple jump out at me, of course. Both Johnsons, I think, have an opportunity. I mean, Penn State showed that they'll play a true freshman cornerback. Joseph Johnson's got a lot that he presents talent-wise and physically, so I'm interested to see that. Keandre Lambert-Smith, who we just talked about. Keziah Holmes, does he work his way? Is he a possible slot guy? I mean, we'll see what happens. There's a lot of options here, and I think these guys, some of them can really benefit from that extra 6 months on campus.
I think I'll call my shot right now and say the guy who looks the most different from January to when they get to the field in August is going to be Bryce Mostella, just because the frame he's working with. I don't think he's going to be ready to play, but I think physically when we see him compared to maybe when he gets on campus in January and we get in the weight room for that the open session, then when we see him in August, I think he's going to be a guy who maybe packs on a significant amount of weight and just looks like a different kind of player. And then you talk about guys who can come in and play right away with whoever the offensive coordinator is. Big time opportunity for Lambert Smith, for Jaden Dotton, for Keziah Holmes, all the names you just mentioned, of course, Theo Johnson. So we'll see what it looks like. It's going to come up real fast, and all of a sudden we'll be seeing pictures of them on campus, and they'll be part of the process, and we won't be able to interview them again for a while. So that's how that all works out. Now, Sean, we were fortunate enough to get, before we get to Barton Simmons, 2020 class, 27 guys on board. It's already the biggest in Franklin's tenure. We've gone over that. We've gone over the players. Is it complete? That's the question that you come away from. You know, you get through the first day of the signing period, the first few hours, and you got 27 guys on board. We had Andy Frank, the director of player personnel. We had James Franklin speaking on the subject, and neither seemed quite sure. They're waiting for NFL draft decisions. I think you still want to see what happens with the transfer portal. You've got until February. There's no doubt they have a board put together of potential targets, but how much wiggle room will they have? Maybe there was a name out there. Fadil Diggs was a guy you were kind of keeping tabs on Wednesday, but where do you kind of see this playing out? Because it is just a strange situation for us to be sitting here a week out of a bowl game, a week out of Christmas, and thinking, well, time to close up shop and focus on 2021.
And I think they'd be happy if they were closed up shop, but really you can't do that. I mean, you can't afford to do that because these guys pop up after January 1st. But what they're going to do, they're going to reshuffle that deck. They're going to look through and start fresh, see if there's a guy that's worth using a scholarship on. They led up to the signing day, Fadil Diggs out of South Jersey, who's a longtime target, been committed to Texas A&M for a long time. You know, kind of got a little cold feet right before signing day, which is what happens. I mean, distance usually becomes a bigger factor in the weeks leading up to signing day. So Penn State sent him a letter of intent. There was a couple other schools in there, Maryland, Florida, a couple other places that were still involved. He decided to stick with the Aggies. So, I mean, that's a plus talent. I mean, that's one of your plan A guys from all the way back at this time last year. So that's one thing. Then do you see some of the guys? So you've gone around to schools for the last couple of weeks in December. You've checked in with these prospects where, you know, you're not ready to offer them a scholarship. Maybe you want to see a little bit more. You want to see them play basketball. You want to see how their tape looks. You want to see how other schools fill up. And if you need to press for these guys and you say, hey, we don't have a spot right now, but we're going to come back in January. We'll talk about it. We'll see what happens. It's definitely a real possibility. Now, that's probably a number that's probably 5 to 10 guys, but you know, you could very well go, you very well see this class ending at 27, or, you know, some of these guys, the stock goes through the roof. I mean, it's crazy how it happens. I mean, they're not much of a better prospect in January than they are in December, but supply and demand being what it is, here you've got guys, you know, they're just going to see an enormous boom. And I'm kind of surprised that more, you know, that are on that line don't wait. Excuse me. We saw a guy in New England this week, Ja Joyner, who was committed to Boston College, but, you know, some schools started coming around. We just rated him as a 4-star on 24/7 Sports. Penn State started poking around. Some other schools started poking around. He got on an official visit to Minnesota, thought he was going to sign in February. All of a sudden, shuts it down, signs with Minnesota. So that's how things can change so quickly at this time of year. It's the dead period right now, so Penn State nobody's on the road, nobody's taking visits, nobody's doing anything like that. So once they hit the ground running in January, we're going to see a couple of spots, and there's a couple of kids I have on my mind. I don't have them in front of me, but a couple of kids, and I think defensive end is a spot they're going to look at. They could use another corner. They could use another athletic defensive back. They'll see what's out there, and then they'll go from there.
Yeah, well, so we'll stay on that on Lines 24/7, no doubt about it. That'll be February 5th, the national signing day that we've known for so many years. That is now, you know, kind of the dessert after the main course. And the last couple of years, just based on the limited track record that we do have with Penn State in the early signing period, they signed 4 players after December last year. They signed 1 player after December in 2018. That was Rasheed Walker, now the starting left tackle. And of course, one other thing, just something to throw out there, keep under your hat. The last 2 years, they had a secret signee that took place during the early signing window that was announced then. Jason Owe in January when he was down in Orlando for the All-American game, and then Devon Ellis last January when he was out at the Polynesian Bowl. So just something to maybe just think over a little bit. Not promising anything.
And I'm so glad there's no Polynesian Bowl commitments this year regarding Penn State. I don't need to be up till 2 o'clock waiting for Devon Ellis. So pretty happy about that one. But yeah, it's a crazy time of year. And you see guys, and you don't mean to rip on kids by saying this, but you see guys that really shouldn't get some of the offers that they're getting because they wait around and they go for it. But all power to them. They're moving up the chain, and they think they can play anywhere. So it seems to be the theme of today.
Well, we will move ahead now because we've got Barton Simmons, and Sean and I are both excited to have him on this episode. He spent a lot of time breaking down this class and coming off of a busy day for himself. So here's that conversation with Barton. I think you're going to learn a little bit more about this group from him. As promised, we've got Barton Simmons on with us, the director of scouting at 24/7 Sports. Hopefully you caught his National Signing Day appearance on the 24/7 Sports show yesterday on CBS HQ. That was a great show, Barton. You had Coach Franklin on there. Obviously, you weren't alone in the production. Steve Wiltfong, Brady Quinn. What was that experience like? I mean, coming out of it here, I know it was the second annual one. Hopefully it's something that, 24/7 Sports and yourself can continue to do.
Yeah, I thought it was great. You know, we enjoyed it. CBS did a really good job with it. I felt like, you know, we wanted to be very reactive to the news as opposed to just sort of taking the you know, 30,000 foot view and looking at class rankings all day long and overviews of who the five stars are. Like, we really wanted to get a, you know, to be about the day and what was going on during the day and all the freneticism that is associated with it. And I think we were able to kind of do that a little bit and kind of keep people informed on what was actually happening. So it was fun. I thought it went well.
My favorite feature may have been, had to be Steve Wiltfong with the flip watch. That was, that was interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
Steve's all over it. You're all over it. Barton, you had Coach Franklin on towards the tail end of that show. What stands out to you about what he had to say? And additionally, you know, initial takeaways from that 30,000-foot view to start of this Penn State recruiting class?
Yeah, I mean, Coach Franklin's always great in those sort of interactions. I think he does a good job of being giving honest answers and thoughtful answers. And I think – you know, this class is another really good class. I mean, I kind of talked to him about the linebackers and how impressed I am with the linebacker group, in particular Curtis Jacobs and Zariah Fisher, but also and he mentioned Tyler Elsden as well as a guy that, you know, has really had a strong senior year and a guy that they're really excited about as well. And then, you know, the other thing that we really touched on, and I was anxious to hear from him about, was just sort of the way they've turned to just absolute mass on the, particularly on the offensive line, but you could make a case it's everywhere, just trying to get bigger, longer, and heftier. And I think, you know, Coach Franklin was good about giving insight about how, look, it's really about trying to find guys that are ready to play and not, you know, not hoping someone develops into an offensive lineman you can lean on late. You know, if injuries start hitting, you actually have the bodies to get in there and play in the meaningful games. And I think that's something that's always important to remember when, you know, when you're, say, comparing our rankings to recruit to actually building out the classes. You know, we're ranking guys individually and sort of looking at projections and who can hit and who has high ceilings, who has low ceilings. But ultimately, when you're building a roster, it's about, you know, it's less about kind of, hey, each individual guy's projectability to the NFL. It can be just about building out body types that give you a chance to look like you want to look and play like you want to play and have guys and have depth of guys you don't miss on many. So this feels like a class where there's not going to be a lot of misses. And it feels like a class that's got pretty good depth to it.
You mentioned the big guys in this group, the biggest of them, they did throw a lot of numbers at that group on both sides, 5 offensive linemen, 6 defensive linemen. You mentioned this, and you've written it pretty extensively, and so have others on the site, about how college football is trending when you look at who's getting drafted high at the offensive tackle position. You know, it's guys who are maybe 250, 260 pounds when they're a high school junior, high school senior. Penn State goes in a different direction. A lot of these guys are hovering around 300 pounds. They've got one, Golden Achumba, who was at 370 pounds just about a year ago. He's down to 320 now, but is that a little bit counterintuitive in some ways to the kind of analytical approach that we've seen Penn State really adopt in a lot of ways and strategize and what they do with recruiting?
Well, see, I've thought a lot about this because, you know, Penn State's not the, like, Penn State is certainly a staff that I think does a really good job in their evaluations and they, I think, are not just sort of chasing stars and that sort of stuff. And, you know, I think Tennessee's the same way. I'm impressed with the way they do things, and they're recruiting the same kind of offensive linemen, just massive dudes. And I think one of the important distinctions to make is, again, you know, we're ultimately, if you're a four-star kid for 24/7 Sports, you're a guy that we think is going to play in the NFL. And that doesn't mean that if you're not a four-star kid, we don't think you will. It's just it's sort of levels of expectation. It's who are the most likely, and three stars maybe we feel like are less likely, but still have a shot. And I think it's important to remember that a great offensive line can be built of not a lot of NFL guys. It can be built around a bunch of it's ultimately an offensive line is like one unit that has to work and operate together and has to be able to institute your game plan and has to set the tone in a lot of ways of a football game. And so I think what I heard from Coach Franklin when I talked about that, because I was sort of wanted to hear his answer on that too, was, you know, they don't want to have guys on their roster at offensive line that they can't play. They want to have guys that provide depth and where they can sort of throw bodies at the game in a lot of ways. And if you were trying to recruit a bunch of future first round draft picks at offensive line by recruiting a bunch of 260 pounders, you're probably going to get a couple really good players out of there, but you might have two or three that never pan out, that never get big enough, that never get strong enough, or when they do, maybe even more specifically, they're two or three years into the program. It's great for us to hit on a five-star who is a 260-pounder coming out of high school. And that sort of reflects well on us at the end of the day when he goes drafted in the first round. But if he's a redshirt junior and has only played 1 year, how much value did you really get out of him as a program? So I think it's a balance, and it's just philosophical, and how do you do things? And I think Penn State seems to be taking the approach of, look, we want to get physical, get big, and get guys that can come in ready for the physicality of the Big Ten.
There's definitely a lot of talk about the trio of linebackers they signed, Barton. One thing that Zariah Fisher, Curtis Jacobs, and Tyler Elston have in common, aside from being future Nittany Lions teammates, is they were all significant risers in one way or another during their senior seasons in 24/7 Sports rankings. And we'll start at the top of this list. He's right on that bubble, a high four-star, the bottom of that five-star group, Curtis Jacobs. I'd love to hear your personal opinion on him. I know you were very high, specifically on the two linebackers they brought in last year, Lance Dixon, Brandon Smith, who were respectively the top outside and inside linebacker prospects in 24/7 Sports 2019 rankings. Where is Curtis Jacobs in comparison to those guys and maybe a Micah Parsons the year before?
I'll keep Micah Parsons on a separate tier from this crowd. But I think Curtis Jacobs could potentially, to me, be on the same sort of tier of those other guys. I want to see him in the All-American game. I want to see him compete up close and just sort of see how he takes to that setting. Ultimately, when you're splitting hairs, that's a good setting to parse things out. But what I love about Curtis and what I really liked about him, because ultimately I look at the linebacker position as an athlete these days more than it is sort of your athlete first, linebacker second, in a way, because that's what the game is. It's you have to be more versatile. You have to be more athletic. You have to be able to play in space. Bulk, size, mass is I think less of a prerequisite for that position. And I think athleticism is actually now the prerequisite. And then when you watch Curtis Jacobs, this is before senior season. You know, he plays, you know, junior. He's out there playing split out, wide, catching passes at receiver. He's outstanding on the basketball court. The body control, the movement skills, the fluidity, all these things athletically that he's got were what really excited me about him as a linebacker prospect. And what was so encouraging about his senior film is the linebacker play was really exciting as a linebacker prospect. Like the way he was a striker, the way he's running through contact, hitting holes and finding running lanes and tracking guys down with the right tackling angles and things like that. Like all these instinctive things and demeanor things at the linebacker position that you like to see were there. And so now you're talking about, you know, where's the arrow pointing? Like the trajectory seems really high. And so I was really excited about that in terms of just seeing your tape. And so I think that's why we moved him up in the rankings to sort of get him in striking distance of the five-star. range so that we could have a chance for him to earn that. There's a lot of guys that we think are five-star candidates right now, and I would include Curtis Jacobs in that group.
I read some of your analysis earlier in the process on Zariah Fisher and how it's becoming more apparent that he is capable of staying in a stand-up role at the college level. We found out yesterday that is exactly what Penn State wants to do with Zariah Fisher. I know he's listed in the weak side defensive end category right now with 24/7 Sports rankings. He's going to stick at linebacker to start in Happy Valley. What did you see that encouraged you to think that, you know, linebacker is something that can stick for a guy who right now is 6'3", 255?
Well, so the first time I watched his senior tape, I watched him assuming he was playing weak side. He'll be a defensive lineman because that's what we had him ranked at. So I figured that he was ranked that way because he was being projected that way by Penn State or most colleges. And I thought, I mean, if you think about him in terms of a defensive lineman, the athleticism he showed, it's like eye-popping to think about a defensive lineman doing those sort of things. And I have not seen him in person, but the pictures I've seen of him looks like he's got a really big frame, capable of being a defensive lineman. And so I got really excited about him in that role. And when I found out he was being projected more as a linebacker, I went back and sort of rewatched the tape and shifted the way my lens there and how I was viewing him. And I still really liked him, kind of in a different way. And I mean, for a guy like that, if all his film was running downhill and like A gap, B gap tackling, then I think you sort of think about him as an old school linebacker with limitations that's not really built for today's game. But that's not what his film is. What he does best on film is the dropping into coverage, like showing soft hands. And as a pass defender, tracking guys down on the perimeter, playing in space, flipping his hips. I mean, these sort of things that you would expect to see on the 6'1", 205-pound linebacker's film, he's doing it at 255 pounds. So this is interesting to me that he's staying at linebacker, but I think he's capable of it. And he reminds me of the kid at Penn State now, who's the kid from Canada. Why am I blanking on his name?
Jesse Luketta.
He reminds me of Jesse Luketta, and I think better. I think almost a better version as I remember what Luketta looked like in high school. So he's going to be a fun one to project. And I think one of the cool things about him is you can fire two bullets on him. I mean, put him at linebacker, but if he keeps on growing, if he eats his way out of linebacker, if he lifts his way out of linebacker, then you still have that defensive line spot. You can play with him, and he's still really, could be even better.
If we can look over to the offensive backfield, Penn State adding a couple four-star running back recruits out of Florida, Kevon Lee and Keziah Holmes. And man, the question around here has been this season, Barton, and you know this, how are they going to use all these running backs? You know, you had Ricky Slade, kind of fall down that depth over the course of the year. Noah Cain make a move. Devin Ford's here already. And Journey Brown, who was the least highly rated recruit out of all of them, finished best when you look at this 2019 season. All those guys could be back. Then you factor in two more running back recruits. What does it say about Penn State, Jawan Sider, to be able to convince these guys? And what does it say about these two running backs that they're all in despite the setting that awaits them in that running back room at Penn State?
Yeah, I mean, it's an impressive effort, especially getting those guys to come out of Florida. It speaks to, I mean, I don't think you could have done that 10 years ago, maybe not six. I don't know. I don't know when you could start doing this, but now is a little bit of a new era where running backs don't feel like they have to get 30 carries a game. Don't feel like they have to get 20. Like they're okay getting 12 a game for a little bit and maybe building up to being the premier guy with in an 18 carry role as an upperclassman or something. So that speaks to, I think, the direction of the position as much as anything, but it does also, I think, really speak to those guys. I mean, I think it takes a competitive kid to want to go up to State College from Florida and fly over those SEC schools and go to the Big Ten and go to a program like Penn State where James Franklin is sort of selling those guys on, it's not going to be easy and we're going to coach you hard and all that sort of stuff. I think it self-selects a little bit. some really good players. And, you know, everything I've heard about Keziah Holmes is he is a phenomenal from a character standpoint and competitive standpoint. And he was the kid I was really excited about at the running back position this class. I've not seen Kevon Lee as much. He hadn't had as much film last time I checked, and I haven't seen him in person. So he's a little of an unknown to me. But Keziah Holmes, senior tape was awesome. Like just really, really good. And we know how fast he is, and I think he's very versatile. And so he's a little bit different. I mean, he's a little more like Journey Brown relative to some of the. I feel like he's a little different than Devin Ford and Noah Kane, and he's a little and probably a little bit different even than Journey Brown. So he adds a unique element to the relative to the rest of the room.
Jaywon Sider said on signing day he thinks Keziah Holmes is going to become a household name at Penn State. So we'll see where that takes him. This wide receiver group, Barton, this is a room that compared to running back, they need instant impact guys, and they need it in 2020. Justin Shorter's in the transfer portal. KJ Hamler could be on his way out to the NFL draft, and it was just not a spot of great production this year. They're bringing in an offensive coordinator. That's going to be part of the conversation, but the talent is too. Keandre Lambert is the guy I've been very high on. Parker Washington. Man, I mean, talk about great, great film. What we've seen of him, really impressive. Jaden Dotton, Malik Mega, a 6'4" kid with 4.42 speed out of Canada. And then Norval Black out of the junior college route. I just threw all those names at you. Feel free to touch on any of them you'd like, because I'm just curious. This is a group that I feel like really needs to come in, and you need at least two of these guys to be on the field, ready to run routes, ready to burn their red shirt.
Yeah, I think Norval Black could be the guy that makes the impact the quickest, just because – from watching his, I think I watched his freshman JUCO film. I'm not sure if I've seen his sophomore stuff. Maybe I did, but there wasn't a lot of it yet. But I remember immediately feeling like this kid's got a lot of polish to his game, natural at the receiver position, just popped as someone that looked college ready. And that's obvious to a degree. You know, he's a JUCO guy relative to some high school guys, but I could see him being a player that makes some plays quickly. And then Keandre Lambert, highest ceiling of the bunch to me. Well, I don't know. Malik Mega probably has the highest ceiling of the bunch. He's just not. I don't see him being ready as a true freshman, but the Mega kid is going to be ready. He's just, what happens with that guy? Like, he could be a first round draft pick.
Yeah.
But who knows? He could never play too. That's the risk you take on a guy like that. But so talented, so athletic. Film strong, like good film. Big playability. Hard to know who he's playing but he can run past guys, I think, anywhere in the country. That one's a fascinating one to me. But I think Keandre Lambert's sort of the guy that, as long as he's strong enough and takes to the offense I think that's the type of player that comes in with the tools, the athleticism, to come in and I think be a factor early in his career.
If we could stay on the pass targets, Theo Johnson was the big fish for this program down the stretch. As you know, Barton, they were able to beat out a few other contenders. Why was he such a big prize at the tail end of this recruitment in terms of the overall, you know, grand scheme of things for not just Penn State, it seemed like a lot of teams wanted this kid, and he was a priority for them.
Yeah, I've said it, and I believe this. This is the best tight end class I've ever seen nationally. And this is the type of kid that I think is usually the number one tight end in the country. I mean, that's how good he is to me. And, is still among the best in the country in this class. And he's so long. Like I'm sure you've seen him. I mean, he's 6'6" and he's all of it. And he's a long 6'6" and he's a wide 6'6" and he's a 6'6" he's 240 pounds. And he looks like he's 215. And, he's just the type of kid that is has so much upside and is a really natural pass catcher. And, you know, with these big tight ends, I mean, the size is half of it. You know, when you're just bigger than people and you can post them up and be a big target and use a catch radius to beat people, it's hard to defend that. And so just the size alone makes him special. But for him to take that size and be able to stretch the field vertically, track the ball the way he does, soft hands he shows, I really think this is the next great tight end at Penn State, and he's gonna be a really nice succession plan for the future without Pat Freiermuth.
He'll be there next month, and Pat Freiermuth said on Wednesday when he announced him as a signee, he said he's going to take him under his wing, and he's going to do everything he can to have him ready to roll in 2020. Barton, I would love to go over a lot more names with you, but we've gone almost 20 minutes now, and you spoke all day yesterday. I'm sure this is not your only conversation post-signing day, so let me just do this. There's a bunch of names in this class, whether it's Enzo Jennings or Cole Brevard or across the board, Jimmy Christ. Who is somebody or a few players here that stand out to you that maybe you value a little bit over where the rankings are at right now, or just in generally, you're a big fan of them and they should not be overlooked by people? I'll throw Joseph Johnson out there too, because he's one of the more compelling names in this class to me.
No, for sure. I'm glad you framed it that way, because there's two names in particular that I think their rankings don't necessarily how do I phrase this? Like, based on what we know about them, they're ranked where they are. But I just sort of have a suspicion that they're a lot better. And the two guys are Joseph Johnson and Tyler Warren. Joseph Johnson, he's really skinny. He was good in camp. Brian Doan saw him, I think, at the Under Armour camp. He's sort of a small school guy. The film is just sort of hard to gauge because it's just not like super high quality. But he's long, and the body movement is there, and the twitch is there. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if this kid ends up being one of the best players in this class, one of the best corners out there. It's kind of a hunch with him. Then the other one is Tyler Warren, who, I mean, he's big, right? So he's 6 foot, whatever he is, 6'5", 6'6", 230 plus. But he played quarterback primarily. I don't think he even had any film out during his senior year. And I think he played mainly quarterback as a senior too, didn't he?
He did.
And so I don't think he's that good of a quarterback, but I think based on his athleticism, he's a really good basketball player. His testing numbers are off the charts. This is the type of guy when you wonder how a kid was a three-star when, we can't just go guessing. And so this is the type of guy, you know, if he was playing tight end or receiver or D end or something else in all these camps or on film for the past couple of years, who knows where he'd be ranked. But but just based on his athletic profile, I'm taking this guy 10 times out of 10, just about any school in the country. And so I'm very anxious to see what Penn State turns him into. I think he's got a chance to be one of the real stars of this class.
Barton, we're of the same mind here. Sean and I have been calling Tyler Warren the mystery man of this recruiting class. We think he could be really special, but we just don't know what it's going to look like. And that's kind of the exciting thing. The coaching staff has talked about that as well. Hey, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you making it for us. And as always, hope the folks out there continue to follow your coverage. And there's another signing day around the corner. I know it feels a lot different these days, but there's another one lurking in February. Fortunately, the bulk of the work is done for most college programs, and hopefully for you too, Barton. Get some family time in, enjoy the holidays, and thanks for the time.
All right, buddy. I appreciate it.
All right, take care. Once again, a big thank you to Barton Simmons. Be sure to follow his coverage throughout the recruiting year, and he's a big part of shaping these rankings that we talk about so much on the show. That's going to do it for now. We'll be back with you next week. Both Sean and myself and Mark Brennan from Lions 24/7 making the trek to Texas. I know Mark will be spending his Christmas there. I'll be flying down on Christmas night. Sean, fortunately, will be with his boys and his family for Christmas before joining us the next day. So we got another Bull Media Day down there. Who knows what could pop up regarding the NFL draft. So we will be on the ground in Arlington, in Dallas, bringing you the latest from there. For now, head over to Lions247.com for coverage of signing day. We'll still have stories stories coming your way from that event for the next couple of weeks, probably so much to get through from conversations with the staff, from recruits. And we do plan on having members of this recruiting class on the podcast as we start to settle into an off-season rhythm here and look a little bit toward that 2020 team. For now, though, we're stepping away. Hope everyone is enjoying the Christmas season out there. Whatever holiday plans you have, get there safely. Enjoy yourself. We'll talk to you soon. For Sean Fitz, I'm Tyler Donahue. This is the Lions 24/7 podcast.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.